Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 5 years ago this month, American couples first entered into same-sex marriage. Now, with half a dozen states expected to allow gay marriage by the end of the year, a new study looks at how things have changed for these couples after making it official. Their lives, their kids, their in-laws, their finances within gay marriage. As the top California court this week upholds a gay marriage ban and America faces big choices on what marriage will look like in the 21st century, we'll look at the real-life impact of gay marriage for those in it. This hour on Point, the realities of same-sex marriage and how it's played out so far. You can join the conversation. Are you in a same-sex marriage? How's it going? What's it meant to you, your life? A lot, a little, and why? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. 5 years ago, after Massachusetts first legalized same-sex marriage, here it was in 2004, the wedding vows of Amy Whitehead and Annette Plow.
I, Amy Whitehead.
Take you, Annette Plow.
Take you, Annette Plow.
To be my lawful wedded wife.
To be my lawful wedded wife.
I, Annette Plow.
Take you, Amy Whitehead.
Take you, Amy Whitehead.
To be my lawful wedded wife.
To be my lawful wedded wife.
Amy and Annette, now that you have proclaimed your love for one another through the declaration of your vows, by the power vested in me by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I pronounce that you are legally married.
5 years now, it's also Connecticut and Iowa coming along, Maine and New Jersey, New York, and more. California yesterday confirmed a big no. Voters had voted in Proposition 8 against gay marriage in that state after 18,000 had been married. The High Court of California yesterday confirmed that vote. Here are demonstrators angry about that outcome outside the state Supreme Court in California. The public debate goes on, and no doubt will go on, but we want to look into the marriages that have taken place in these last 5 years and see what we can learn in this hour. Joining me now from Washington is Lee Badgett, Research Director at the Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation, Law, and Public Policy at UCLA, and senior author of the Institute's new study on the impact of marriage on same-sex couples. She's also director of the Center for Public Policy and Administration at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Her book, When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage, will be out this summer. Lee Badgett, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you, what, I guess you talked with Massachusetts couples because they've had it going on in Massachusetts for the longest, for 5 years. How many, how big a survey was this?
We surveyed several thousand people, and we found about almost 600 couples, or 600 people who've been married to a same-sex partner. That is maybe 5% or so of the 16,000 same-sex couples who have gotten married in Massachusetts so far.
And what kind of questions did you ask them once you found them?
We wanted to know why they got married in the first place and what effect has marriage actually had on them, both in terms of their relationship as couples, on their families, on their children, on their economic status. We were interested in just getting a big picture, kind of taking the pulse of gay couples at this point in time. 5 years is long enough to start seeing some of those effects.
And what kind of, we'll get into the details, but give us some headlines from your findings, Lee.
I think they'll be actually quite familiar to people and may even move us away from, you know, talking about gay marriage, because really I think what we just see is marriage in these figures. We see people getting married for personal reasons, deeply personal reasons about love and commitment. We see people getting married for practical reasons. We see people getting married and feeling more socially included and actually, surprisingly enough, seeing a lot of support from their friends and family members.
More support of their relationship, of their gay relationship with marriage added to the mix or not?
It looks that way. That's what these couples have told us. They said that once they got married, many of them reported that their families start accepting their partners more. that they express support for them and for their relationship, and that they feel more supported as a result of that, and that they feel more accepted socially. Their children feel more accepted socially. So the social piece of marriage really comes through very strongly in our survey.
So out of those that you were, the hundreds that you talked to, I'm looking here at some of your results. 61% women, most in their 40s, married same-sex couples in Massachusetts anyway, tended in your those who responded to you to be highly educated, 85% finished college, relatively high median incomes. You asked them why they got married, and they said for love and commitment, 85% talked about the importance of legal recognition as important. What about that, the importance of legal recognition? You know, I mean, that's what this is all about in one sense, but you've looked at it closely. What do you read in that? Why is so much importance in having the law involved?
I think there's two angles. One is certainly the practical value of the law, and that's what we really hear a lot about in the debate, that people need the right to be recognized as a family member. So that's a way to get health insurance in our current health insurance system. It's a way to protect your family if someone is suddenly taken ill. It means you can be in the hospital with them and help make decisions for their care. It's about, it's about property and being clear about the relationship between the two people. And although we didn't really do too much with this in this survey, it is also sometimes, unfortunately, about what happens when you divorce, and marriage gives you very clear-cut legal rules about what you do with property. So those sorts of practical rules that people know will define their relationship, I think, are a big reason why people want to get married. But in addition to the practical piece, I think that there's a big symbolic value of equality. So it's not just that the government says, you know, you two are now legally related and have all these rules you have to follow, but it also says that you are equal. You are just as valid a family, just as legitimate a family as two different sex people who want to get married. And that's a very important value to couples, I think. And it also actually comes through in terms of talking about their kids.
Important, and important for legal reasons, but beyond legal reasons, your survey makes very clear. Elaborate on that. Beyond the advantages in law and attendant economics, just the fact of marriage, what has it meant for these couples and their kids?
Well, it's something that people understand, and I think that's the, you know, that was the crux of the issue in California, for instance. What's the difference between a civil union and a marriage? And I think what we see in this survey, you know, we didn't compare it to civil unions, but we certainly see the importance of marriage. We had some open-ended questions, and people got to elaborate a bit on why they got married or what the impact has been on their kids. So, for instance, several people said, you know, it's been great for my kids. My kids now can explain our family to their teachers, to their friends' parents. It's something that people get. They're not weird anymore. They're not seen as being, you know, a different kind of family. They like the fact that they can be equal and that their family is considered equal. So that's a, you know, that's not dollars and cents, and that's not about the legal rights. That's really about the understandable social institution of marriage that everybody gets. Everybody gets that.
You found about a quarter, 28% of those you surveyed had children. You say that it's easier for the kids. We can explain our family, they say to you. Has there been trouble or difficulty with that as well? I mean, they can explain their family. You know, these are my parents. They're married. At the same time, it's, you know, two women or two men. Is it awkward? Has there been reports in your survey of teasing, downside, awkwardness or not?
Well, right. Of course, you know, just because Massachusetts lets gay couples get married doesn't mean that there aren't people who still think that gay and lesbian people, you know, are doing something wrong. So, and sometimes their kids do get some flack from their friends, from their peers mainly about that. We asked people, have your kids been teased about having gay parents? And about a quarter of the parents said yes, that had happened. Although in some of the longer discussions, it was clear that had happened, you know, a long time ago or in a different place. But that's really not so much related to marriage per se. When we asked about whether kids had been teased about marriage, only a handful of folks reported that had actually happened. What's interesting, and I think is being played out in California as well, from what I've heard out there, is that the larger social debate takes a toll on kids of gay parents. Those kids go to school, and their peers may be hearing about, in California, for instance, you know, the vote on Prop 8 and some of the ads that were run around that, and the
it's pretty rough out there.
It was. It was quite rough. And a lot of parents reported their kids coming home in tears and being afraid. And we saw a couple of examples of this in Massachusetts where parents said, you know, the only problem my kid had was that he was afraid that the politics of the situation would result in our marriage being revoked. And that would have been, you know, something that would have been harmful to him. And another set of parents responded that their daughter had been very afraid for her parents and her family when they actually got married, because she'd been hearing a lot of this anti-gay rhetoric, and that to her meant that if they told people that their parents got married, that maybe there would be some harm that would come to them. Somebody would come beat her up or would do something bad to her parents. And so she was afraid for those reasons. So, you know, kids are very sensitive to those outside messages, but it's really does not, at least in terms of what people reported to us, it's not that, you know, that they are, you know, embarrassed about their families or ashamed of being there. It's more the social context that's actually causing problems.
The national debate may be hard to hear, but it is very real debate. Lee Badgett with UCLA, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about the impact of marriage on gay couples as the country wrestles with gay marriage. We're 5 years into the same-sex marriage era. More states have been permitting it progressively. California, yesterday, very prominently, after a vote last fall that said no, the Supreme Court coming in to endorse that vote. 18,000 marriages that did take place will stand, said the court there. Here's the sound of two of those marriages, two gay men being married in San Francisco in June of 2008.
By virtue of the authority vested in me as Deputy Marriage Commissioner for the State of California, I now pronounce you spouses for life.
Just spouses for life, and off it went until it didn't. But the issue is very much alive around the country, and Lee Badgett, who joins us today from the Williams Institute at UCLA, has just done a survey of Massachusetts couples. Those would be those longest married at this point, some 5 full years as of this month, and what that marriage has meant in their lives. I'm going to hear in a few minutes from an opponent of gay marriage and get a sense from that perspective of what these findings imply. But let's hear from some listeners first. In Colchester, Vermont, Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Tom. I currently am in a marriage with my same-sex partner.
Okay.
Not currently. In September, when our law goes into effect, I will be married. But as of now, I'm just in a civil union, and I can tell you that the main difference for me that I was most concerned about was in the instance of an emergency room visit, and like we're in a situation where I need to be making medical choices on behalf of my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I say to the doctor or nurse, I am his husband, or they know what that means. Whereas if I say I'm his civil union partner, you know, if I'm in rural Mississippi or someplace where civil unions are not common or known of, then they're going to say, what is that? You can go in the waiting room.
If you're in rural Mississippi, it may be an issue anyway. I'm not sure, Michael, but you've already been in a civil union. How much does it mean to you that it will become a legal marriage? I mean, is it Lee's pointing to emotional issues beyond the legalities of emergency room visitation rights, but you're already in a relationship. Do you anticipate an emotional piece to this as well?
For me personally, there is some emotional issues, but that wasn't the main crux of why I wanted to move forward with a marriage instead of a civil union. I mean, yes, there are emotional issues, just that, you know, when I'm engaging in an everyday conversation and need to reference my husband, I can reference him as such instead of having to feel like I am obliged to say civil union partner, because I don't consider myself his civil union partner. I consider myself his husband, and so does he, so I Michael, I'm entitled to say as much.
We've got it loud and clear. Thank you for calling. Lee, what about this kind of legal issue, the comfort of knowing that when the chips are down, you have the rights of a spouse to interact with a spouse who may be in trouble?
That's big for a lot of people. I think, you know, we've seen some horrific cases. There was one recently in Florida where a woman was not allowed to go into an emergency room with her partner who had an aneurysm and eventually died. She and her children were kept away. And I think that's the sort of scenario people imagine, the worst case scenario, and they want to make sure that's not going to happen. I mean, you're right. If he goes to Mississippi, where they may not recognize his marriage formally in the state, you know, that's potentially an issue. But actually, you know, I think a lot of people at the level of individual transactions, you know, people talking to people often will find that that people in emergency rooms are sometimes willing to say, ah, okay, so you're married, or they get the connection and they will try to make accommodations. I've certainly heard that from people in places that you would never expect, like Tennessee and other places where there's not a friendly policy environment towards gay couples, but people still get it. They still get what that marriage means.
You hear Michael's ease with the language of same-sex marriage calling in from Vermont. He seems quite comfortable talking about his husband. As I'm reading your survey findings here, you also found that gays tended to be more open about their lives out in the world, in the workplace and elsewhere, when gay marriage became part of the picture. What did you find, and why do you think that's so?
Well, I think it's exactly the reason that you just heard. I think once you start describing somebody, if you're a man and you talk about your husband, or if you're a woman and talk about your wife, then, you know, it's a pretty direct line there. I think people are going to assume that you're gay, probably pretty reasonably. Whereas if you're talking about your partner or maybe even your spouse, then, you know, there's a question, you know, who exactly is this person that we're looking at? So I think that's a great example. You know, when you go with your partner to the emergency room or go to your kid's school and have to, you know, explain your family, I think those are times when people need to know your legal status, and that's when you have to say, yeah, that person that I'm talking about is somebody who's the same sex that I am.
Let's go to Kayla in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Kayla, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm okay. What do you know, Kayla?
Well, what happened was in May, 5 years ago, actually. It's an amazingly long time.
Yeah.
My partner and I had a shotgun marriage because my daughter was in utero at the time. So we did the traditional shotgun marriage where one partner is pregnant and then you get married.
Yeah, but wait a minute. A shotgun marriage for a gay couple? I mean, I think of shotgun marriage, a guy gets a woman pregnant and then they're forced to be married. What does that mean in a lesbian context?
Got her pregnant. It wasn't me, but we got her pregnant, although I did participate. But it wasn't
okay.
From
That's a different
first.
Kind of shotgun, but okay, I got it.
Different kind of shotgun. And what happened was we got married, and my father-in-law, who's one of the most homophobic people I've ever met from Vermont, he gave my partner away and cried like a baby, absolutely cried like a baby. He was so emotional and so present. It was unbelievable.
But emotional in a happy way, or was he sobbing because she was going into a gay marriage?
He was really happy, and he has a gay son as well as a gay daughter. And what was so fascinating is, when we asked him what he thought about gay marriage, he said, "I don't want to give all the business to the lawyers for the divorces."
I see. Okay,
so that was his homophobic take on it.
And 5 years on, how's it working? What's it meant to you, Kayla?
The best part was that I was on my daughter's birth certificate. I didn't have to adopt her. So this huge rigmarole that many people have to go through, mm-hmm. which is adopting their non-biological child, I didn't have to do. As soon as the birth certificate was ready, I was on it. So it was remarkable.
So the rights and responsibilities of parenthood right there, in black and white.
There, in legal, it was just right present. There was no financial wrangling. There was nothing that we had to do other than me fill out the paperwork. And it says parent and co-parent. And the other thing that the worst part of this, I have to say, is the taxes. Doing the taxes every year, I feel very sorry for my accountant, and we have to pay much more for our accountants because they can't just do one set of taxes. He has to run the numbers married, filed singly, married, filed jointly, one part for the Massachusetts and one part for the feds.
Because, of course, it's not recognized by the federal government.
It's not recognized, and so there's lots of things that are recognized, but we're still not recognized financially because of the federal government.
So on balance, it sounds as though you're happy for this, but for you, for your relationship, for you personally, but what about for society, Kayla? There are a lot of people who still say, no, you know, this is not the way to go. What do you say?
Well, you know, we're raising a well-adjusted child who thinks that she's as normal as anybody else, and we belong to a church that completely embraces and accepts us. And also, we just have lots of friends who are straight, lots of friends who are gay, and nobody has gotten hurt by us. I can't quite understand what the harm is. The other thing is I'm a couples counselor. That's what I do for a living, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem to harm my clients either. They know that I'm gay. They know that I'm in a gay marriage, and I work with lots of heterosexual couples, and they're getting help from me as well.
Kayla, I thank you very much for your call, and I wish you luck there in Williamsburg. Thanks for being with us today. Lee Badgett, stand by. I want to bring another voice into this conversation. Sam Shulman joins us. He's author of a featured piece in the new issue of the Weekly Standard. It's headlined, "The Worst Thing About Gay Marriage." He's also written for the Wall Street Journal, Spectator, the Jewish World Review. Mr. Shulman, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
So Lee and her group from UCLA have gone out, talked with a lot of gay couples and found the changes in their lives. You know, some of the questions are rather intimate. This is down into family relations and how their extended families accept them, schools, and so on, and finds a pretty positive response. You're looking at this society-wide, and I guess you'd be saying, fine, but still no thanks. Why, Sam Shulman?
The subtitle of my piece, Tom, mm-hmm. Identifies the worst thing about gay marriage, and it's not that I think gay people should not have long-term relationships, and that they are not capable of being as faithful and loving as straight people. Mm. I know that it is not true. I make the kind of.
I'm sorry. I want to be sure I understand what you're saying.
Yes.
You know that that
may, I know
is
that,
true or
that
is not.
Gay people, yeah. Gay people are just as likely to form long-term relationships, to fall in love, mm-hmm. to be faithful, to be loving.
Okay.
To,
I understand.
To enjoy all the human joys of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was historically disgraceful that this could not be done in public, and in mm-hmm. fact that it was criminal in mm-hmm. in most countries until quite recently.
And nevertheless, you're opposed to same-sex marriage.
I'm opposed to same-sex marriage in a troubled way, because I think that its clear benefits to the to those who are involved in it, and the results of Lee's study do not surprise me in the least.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage is good for everyone who's in it. I think she could probably dig up half a dozen studies that show exactly the same beneficial effects on
heterosexual
different sex couples.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
But I think that in the long run, it is going to undermine the benefits of marriage for the group of people, of human beings, for whom marriage exists fundamentally, for whom that is really the reason why marriage exists in every human culture rather than not exist,
mm-hmm.
which is women as a sex, that half of humanity. And
I need you to explain that a little more thoroughly.
Yes.
It sounds like you've got a body of thinking behind that. What is it?
Marriage, which is famous for as an institution for enslaving and degrading women, is and rightly so. Nevertheless, it exists in among us humans in lots and lots of different forms for a reason, and that is that ultimately it is protective of women's identity, women's physical security.
To make sure the guy sticks around and provides.
That's part of it, to make sure that there is a father, not necessarily a biological father, but a sort of legal or religiously recognized father. And also it is the building block of the kinship system, which links together generations, which and keeps apart folks who should not mate, like mothers and sons and brothers and sisters and dads and daughters. It's a much more radical change in than any social experiment that that Marx or Freud or Richard Dawkins has yet come up with, and it may not be disastrous, but we really ought to think about it a lot harder than we've been doing. Now, my latest piece is somewhat teasing. I say that gay marriage will fail gay people themselves. It's clearly wonderful for the sample of married people that Lee identified. Lee would say, you know, that she does not have a control of people in committed same-sex relationships that chose not to get married, and that would be impossible to do. But and it's clearly great for the kids of such families as have kids. But what I'm concerned about, what I can foresee, is because for gay people in relationships, the act of marriage does not create the fact of a new family. I mean, it can, it often does, but it depends on generally the niceness of the individual.
The two can make a family, and it does create that.
Oh, absolutely. They make a family, but they also don't need the benefits of marriage to do so. And you know, God bless them if they do.
So, Sam, stand by for a second. I want to hear more, but I want to get Lee Badgett's response. Lee, on the basis of the survey you've been doing, you hear Sam, he's applying his mind here and remains uncomfortable. Given the survey results, I don't know how these two intersect, but how do you respond to what Sam's describing?
Well, he raises some interesting questions, I think. You know, one is about what is marriage for, and I think his take on it sounds like something that would be much more familiar to folks 100 years ago, for instance, than I think it would be today about what marriage is for. But I'll pick out the one thing that I think we would probably agree on, which is the importance of kinship and how marriage does connect families. It connects the two people who get married and their children, and then it connects them to, you know, all the in-laws and the networks of families. And I think that is something that we have seen as being important to people. And here I'm thinking partly of our study where we're getting feedback from people saying, yeah, you know, we are now actually being considered part of the family in a way that we had not been before. So marriage really seems to serve the same purposes for gay people. They're certainly choosing to get married for a lot of the same reasons. So I don't really understand the point about gay people not needing this kind of tie to kinship or the other pieces of marriage that people clearly see as being valuable. So I think that, you know, where we might agree on the importance of kinship, that there's a lot of support that gay people do value that as well. And we know that from lots of other studies, too. In fact, you know, whether you're talking about gay people being involved in caretaking for their elderly parents, and a lot of times, you know, straight siblings will look to their gay siblings, you know, to say, hey, you know, you don't have a family, you know, you need to step up to the plate.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the impact of marriage on gay couples as the country wrestles with gay marriage. Lee Badgett is here from the Williams Institute at UCLA. They've just done a survey of gay marriage, same-sex marriages, and what it has meant to those involved. She's found a lot of benefits. Sam Schulman's here from Virginia. He doesn't doubt that there are benefits, but he remains opposed to the idea of gay marriage. He says it eventually will work against women and isn't good for society. It was famously in the headlines in California yesterday as the Supreme Court there upheld the vote, the referendum, to ban gay marriage. Famously in the headlines when Miss California, Carrie Prejean, was asked about gay marriage during during her big beauty pageant in April. Her answer became the subject of a lot of controversy.
We live in a land that you can choose same-sex marriage or opposite marriage. And you know what? In my country and in my family, I think that I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to anybody out there, but that's how I was raised, and that's how I think that it should be between a man and a woman. Thank you.
No offense to anybody out there. Thank you. But it remains hot. Betsy in Sandwich, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Betsy.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We were together, my spouse and I were together for 14 years before we got married, and we've been married since October of 2004. And I would agree that it just lends a lot more credibility to your relationship. I mean, we were treated very well by our families beforehand, and we tend to be the ones that put on things like Thanksgiving, so our families got to know each other. But since we've been married, it's just a subtle shift, but it's a very, very important one. You know, the nieces and nephews now are getting married, and there's been deaths, there's been divorces, and we've just been honored, I think, more as a couple since we've been married.
And what about, you hear Sam Schulman's concern that over time this may erode protections that historically have been important for women in particular. Do you follow the logic of that?
Well, I guess I find it sexist as well as against gay people. I don't really understand that. Well, we don't have any children. Plenty of our friends who are gay have children, so we experience that as well as family. But I mean, for me, marriage. I guess I don't understand that argument about children, because you don't have to have children to get married in any state.
Yes, please. And Betsy, thank you very much for your call. Sam Schulman.
Yes, I'm trying to say yeah. is not that I think that Victorian marriage is the norm, though I would remind Lee that 50 years ago marriage was more sexist than it is now in our part of the world. 50 years ago in Cairo and Tehran, marriage was a much more pleasant affair, and women had more freedom than they do now. Progress is fragile, and I'm talking about, and this is why this has not really anything to do with children. I'm talking about the moral authority of a woman to demand a commitment from a man, and I'm talking about women who are in the unfortunate position, perhaps for them, of being heterosexually oriented and needing to deal with us men, as Beyonce reminds us, women have the right to say, put a ring on it, and women past childbearing age have this right, and it is a protection. And it's not.
Though I must say, even in advance of everything to do with same-sex marriage, the numbers are already very high about the percentage of American children born outside wedlock.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, quite apart from gay marriage.
Absolutely. That's a pretty sad situation. Not moral. Well, apart from whether you think it's a sad situation morally, it's certainly a sad situation for the children and for the mothers of the children. And it involves poverty, and it involves much higher numbers of physical abuse and sexual abuse. I mean, it's
why can't mothers continue to have the protection of marriage in whatever kind of relationship they're in if there's a same-sex marriage going on?
They can. However, if as I suspect, same-sex marriage, it's clearly there's a pent-up demand among these quite wonderful people that that have been calling in, and many other wonderful people that I know and are dear to me, there's a pent-up demand for these protections and for this status. But I think that in the long run, or in the medium run, gay people will find perhaps those without children more than those with children. But gay people will find that it just isn't worth the trouble. And it, you know, as someone who has been married and am happily married, and it's still a lot of trouble. And one of your callers from my old town of Williamsburg talked about the tax problems. Gay people can be perfectly committed to one another and protected in a long-term relationship without marriage in a way that, well, I mean, guys feel they can be, but women can't be. And it has nothing to do with whether they're of childbearing age or not.
I'm trying to get my head around it. I'm not sure I fully have, but I'm listening closely. I want to get a comment here from one of our listeners, Russell in Buffalo. You're on the air, Russell.
Hi, Tom. Russ Link from Buffalo, New York.
Hi.
I'm 76 years old, son.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in a committed relationship for 30 years.
Okay.
And I just wanted to get in a perspective of an old guy who's sort of been hanging around for
a while. Right, seen a lot. Okay, let's hear it.
Who's, you know, waiting for New York to come forward and actually get the marriage law on the books, so we could get married here before I croak.
Okay.
When all is said and done, Tom, I think that you do a wonderful job here, and I've been listening on and off for years to your programs, and I hear you talking about with wonderful people like you have on today, except Sam is a little tortured there in his logic and his explanation of what he feels. And why it's even on this program is beyond my understanding. However, the idea about marriage and the word itself is something that I, you know, would love to be able to say that I have been in a committed relationship in a way that I don't have to define. A lot of people have been talking about this way today. You know, I'd like to say, we're married. This is my husband. And take it from there, you know? And also,
it's easy. It's straightforward. People understand the construct.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, when all is said and done, people are a lot smarter than politicians give us credit for about what does go on in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And religion, you know, is another thing. You haven't even been talking about that. That's a program you should do someday. Why is it that I'm an Episcopalian, I go to church, and... as a matter of fact, the priest in my church is gay, and many gay men and women, and many straight gay men, men and women go to that church. There are families there with children that are straight couples who have children. There are no gay couples there with children, but I do know many gay couples who have children. Children seem to be fine. Mothers on mothers, fathers and fathers seem to be fine. Everybody's getting along fine. Those people who don't like the fact that marriage, you know, between two guys, two gals, and think about the fact that it might be irreligious, you know, against the Bible, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Let them, you know, take their churches and their activities and be there. You know, do that. Do their thing. Nobody's asking me to go into the local Roman Catholic Church and ask the priest to get married.
Russell, we got it. We hear it, and you're 76 and waiting. And in fact, if what I'm reading is correct, New York may bring you that right. Hang in there. Hang in there, Russell. It sounds like you will. I appreciate your call. I want to get one more voice in here from Washington, Nancy Polakoff. Polakoff is professor of law at American University College of Law. She's author of Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. Nancy, thanks a lot for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, there was a big conversation at a family get-together. Russell was asking why I've got Sam on. Well, I know that this isn't a settled deal in this country. Everybody knows that. Whatever people's perspective is, and we were sitting at a graduation over the weekend with a big debate still going on within the family. It sort of bore out, you know, older generation versus those younger. But Nancy, you've said maybe we should just change the... My mother-in-law said, well, why do we have to have all these legal rights attached to marriage at all? Why not make some other avenue to these legal rights that people care so much about? Is that your position, Nancy?
Essentially, it is my position that when we have laws that deal with relationships, we ought to really be looking at the purpose of the law, and then we ought to be including within the law the relationships that make sense to achieve the purpose. So rather than a bright dividing line, you're married and you get all these rights and responsibilities, you're not married and you get none,
mm-hmm.
we really need to look more at how people are actually living and do some justice by the way people are living their lives. And not have marriage be this bright dividing line.
So does that mean you're a civil union person or something else?
Well, I'm an equality person, so as long as different sex couples have the right to marry, I believe that same-sex couples deserve that right. I would prefer to have the name of the civil institution for all couples change to civil partnership. I like partnership as a concept for coupledom in a modern society.
And then everybody would be civil partners, straight or gay?
That's right. Now, people could go ahead and say they were married. I don't have any problem with that. Family law has a long history of changing the legal name for something to reflect a more modern idea. For example, there are many states, including California, that don't have divorce anymore. They have a proceeding and a status they call dissolution. I'm sure everybody says they're divorced when their marriages end, but their pieces of paper don't actually use the word divorce. I'd like the state's pieces of paper to use the term civil partnership, and marriages can continue in churches, and certainly if people want to, gay and straight, refer to themselves as married, you know, that colloquial use doesn't bother me. I'm not interested in policing people's vocabulary.
Right.
But I think the actual status that couples get in the eyes of the state should have a name other than marriage, but I still wouldn't make that status all or nothing for legal rights, because I still think that leaves out too many people.
Lee Badgett, let me ask you, from your survey results, do you think that would do it for those in same-sex marriages? Is it the name, the word, marriage, or is it simply equality? If everybody had civil partnerships, would that flip the same triggers, Lee?
Possibly. I think to call it just a word, though, I think does it an injustice. I mean, marriage is much more than just a legal term, and it's got lots of layers of social connection related to kinship, as we were talking about with
mm-hmm.
Sam. It's got lots of personal meaning to people, and it's, you know, to say we'll call them civil partnerships and then anybody can call them marriage if they want to, you know, that might actually work, and that may be fine for folks. But I think, you know, unless they're exactly equal, it's it's going to be hard to enforce equality. So I think, you know, while we have the term marriage, I think, you know, it's got to be equal for both groups. That's kind of what we're hearing from same-sex couples who definitely vote with their feet. They're much more likely to get married if they have the choice than to get a civil union, for instance.
Sam, would that work for you to make civil partnerships the way of the land?
Well, it would be Solomonic, but I'm so glad you brought Nancy onto the show, Tom, because I'm sure she'd be horrified that I think this, but she's beautifully showing my point about marriage, which Lee is also picking up on, and that there is something you can't be a pure rationalist about it, as Nancy brilliantly is. There is a transcendent dimension to it which is left out of the term civil union, and the beneficiary of that dimension is women, even in a feminist analysis it is women for whom marriage exists rather than just pair coupledom. And
Sam, hold the thought right there, because I need some Nancy. Do you follow that? Do you see marriage as for women ultimately in human nature?
I think that argument is incredibly flawed, and so I disagree with that.
No, I'm sure Nancy doesn't.
I disagree with that entire construct. I'd like to also try to respond to one of the callers. I was very disturbed that one of your callers said because she was married to her partner and her name went on the birth certificate, that she was completely protected as a parent. I'm afraid there's a lot of misunderstanding about marriage in the country at the moment. She is protected in the state of Massachusetts. The jury
as a parent with the full legal rights
as a parent with full legal rights, and she should be protected everywhere. But as long as we've got all these states with their Defense of Marriage Act, she may find that if she and her partner, spouse, and child move, that parent-child relationship is not protected. And Cynthia Nixon, star of Sex and the City, last week announced she was getting married, and the reason that she announced was her fear about what would happen to her children if she were to die, but those children have a father, and so her spouse becomes a step-parent, which doesn't give her any legal rights to the children.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, or a different sex spouse. I'm afraid that people have some incomplete ideas about the legal consequences of marriage today, and that they're going to make some mistakes because of that.
In the patchwork that our country is facing right now, you know, we are not going to settle this today, but it's been a fascinating conversation, a kind of way station along the way, and we will return to it. Lee Badgett, for all the work you did with the survey 5 years after the first legal gay marriages in this country, we're grateful to you. Thank you for presenting that material to us today, Lee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Lee Badgett at UCLA. Sam Shulman, thank you very much for your line of thinking today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Nancy Polakoff at American University College of Law. Nancy, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.